Backs to shade, bellies to sun. Backs to shade, bellies to sun. Back to shade, bellies to sun. Let's go. Elliot, today's podcast is brought to you by Controversy, or as they say across the pond, Controversy.
Love that word.
Panarin, Milstein. Artemi Panarin and his agent, Dan Milstein. Now, Milstein came out recently and said, my agent will not talk contract until the end of the season. Over to you, Jarmo Kekäläinen. Pull the pin out of the grenade and roll it in the room. How do you read this one?
You know, I don't know if it should be a grenade in the room. Hockey players are business people now as much as anything else. They understand how contracts and things work. If I was a player, I don't think that would bother me. Actually, Panarin wouldn't bother me because he's played all year really well. The Bobrovsky thing is mystifying to me. Mm-hmm. It benefits him to have a dynamite season and he hasn't had it. If it was him, I would probably be a bit more angry about it than I would be about Panarin. But generally, I think players understand it's a business. The one question I have is, does Jarmo Kekäläinen believe his team is good enough to win a Stanley Cup? If I'm sitting in his chair and I believe that, I'm all in. I'm pushing my chips to the middle of the table and I'm saying if I lose to a great hand. Now, if he thinks they're not that good, mm-hmm. then I'm making the trades. But if he thinks they can really win, I have no problem with taking a run at it.
If you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, do you not as well have a look around the Metro? With all due respect to the Islanders, you can feel how you feel about what Barry Trotz has done. It's been outstanding. Are they legit? Is this a legit deep playoff team? Is this a legit, you know, contender in the Eastern Conference? However you feel about the Islanders, hit pause on them, but look around. As we record this podcast, Caps, 7 losses in a row.
I still think they're outstanding, though.
Pittsburgh Penguins dropping down again. We're recording this before we do the Tampa-Pittsburgh game this evening. At this point, losers of 4 of their last 5.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not look around the division and say, why not?
100%. Like, are there any upsets in the playoffs anymore?
What's an upset?
Exactly. There's no such thing as a playoff upset anymore. None. These teams, they're so evenly matched. The lines of difference are so tiny compared to each other. Mm-hmm. Look, how many times have the Washington Capitals come out and say, we were a crossbar from being down 3-0, and then Lars Eller scores off his tushy, and we're back in the series. That's how close that series was for Columbus last year.
They were on the ropes. Caps were on the ropes.
Caps were on the ropes. They were Ali in the rumble and the jumble looking like he was about to lose. Mm-hmm. I just think that if you're the Columbus Blue Jackets and you think you've got a chance, you're going for it. I know conventional wisdom is trade these guys for something. You're going to have, if the cap goes up to 83, even with Werenski to sign, you're going to have, you know, $30 million in cap room. That is the big commodity in the NHL. If you think you can win, go for it. And if I was in that seat, that's what I would do.
I was going to say, what do you say then to all the people who maintain you can't let these guys walk for nothing?
Mm-mm. You're not letting them walk for nothing. You're getting cap space. That's not nothing. Now, Kekäläinen also has more information than I do. Maybe somebody steps up and makes him an unreal offer that he just can't say no to. Mm-hmm. That could happen. The one thing I like about him is that last year, I think in a lot of people's eyes, should have traded Jack Johnson. And there was an internal thing, too, because I think Johnson wanted to be traded so he could increase his value as a player. But he said, no, I'm not doing it unless I get a first rounder, and he didn't do it. Same thing with Matt Calvert. He knew he was going to be a UFA, and he held on. So his history is to do that. I support that. I think you have to show your organization that if you believe it can win, you're going to go for it. So I think that's his history, and I think he'll stick to that.
Do you think there's any way he resigns Panarin with the Blue Jackets?
Look, Jeff, how many times when you were in high school, if you asked somebody out, even in university later before you got married, if you asked somebody out 4 times?
Yeah.
And they said no 4 times.
Yeah.
How many times was the 5th lucky?
About zero. About zero times.
Well, I'm glad you can explain that because I can't speak to this problem. Like, I never had a problem getting people to say yes.
Romance across from me.
That's
here.
Right.
Okay.
It's hard sometimes when you're in it because you don't want to give up hope.
Sure.
But the odds are really against you. You have to assume that he's gone.
Bobrovsky.
And take it as a pleasant surprise if it's the other way around.
Bobrovsky, I want to get to your Florida ID here in a couple of seconds, but Sergei Bobrovsky, what's the latest there?
You know, I don't understand what's happened to him this year. He's a dynamite goalie. I think we all know that, but his season has been so weird. From blowing them off last summer in a meeting, you know, Panarin is not costing himself any money. Bobrovsky this year, it remains to be seen if he's costing himself any money, but he certainly hasn't played up to the level that you would expect him to be, and he has shown he can be. If he was 90% of normal, you think you have a chance to win, but he hasn't been there, and he's lost the job at times to Korpisalo. To me, that's Kekalainen's biggest decision, is his goaltending good enough? Now, I had heard last summer that he was willing to consider some teams, and I couldn't prove it. And then I heard during the year he had said he was willing to consider some teams. I did say that I'd heard that, and I believed it to be true. Pierre LeBrun reported a week ago, or 2 weeks ago now, that he has said that he will consider teams. But there's one thing I don't know here, Jeff, and that is, has he actually given a list? Has he actually said to Columbus, put it on paper, that if you will deal me to one of these teams, I will go? Because what I've heard is that it's verbal. He has said, I will consider these teams, but when Columbus asked him to put it on paper, he and his agent said no, because they didn't want to give up complete control of the situation. So the truth is somewhere in the middle.
How do you feel? What's your spidey sense on how this one plays out then? Sometimes we can see players behave a specific way off the ice to enhance their negotiating power with that team. I don't get a sense that this is that example.
No, I think Columbus has believed that Bobrovsky's gone, and I think now they recognize Panarin will be too. Like, I think somebody's going to make them a good offer for Panarin. They're going to get it. And they're going to have to decide, A, does it meet the threshold of what they consider is acceptable? And B, do they really want to do it? Again, I know I've said this 35 times and I sound like a broken record, but I'll do it again. I really think if I'm them, I'm going for it. At some times in your history, you have to say, we're going for it. And to me, that time is now for Columbus.
So
but I do think somebody will tempt them on the forward.
Essentially, what you're saying is mentally, just treat them as if there are rentals.
Yes, 100%.
These are the rentals we have picked up for this run.
100%.
Sneaky / stealth candidate for both come July 1st. You have a feeling about Florida?
I just think that's a place both of them would be willing to go. I think that's a team that's going to need a jolt. You know, they've missed the playoffs again a couple of years in a row after getting there. And the biggest issue they've had is goaltending. And not because Roberto Luongo isn't game, it's simply because his body isn't there anymore. First of all, I think the one thing that we all have to remember is Luongo lasted a lot longer than I think a lot of us thought he would. I don't know how many people thought he'd still be playing now, but it's finally happening. And you look at Florida, why have they missed the playoffs the last 2 years with a pretty good team?
Goaltending?
Yeah. And I could see Panarin wanting to go in that area too. Now, I'm curious to see what that's going to mean around them. Are they going to have to move some guys out to get those guys in? But I can see that organization saying, we need to change things up. We need a breath of fresh air, and those two guys can bring it. And I think they'd both play there.
The Florida Panthers conversation is on the horizon for us eventually here on the podcast. In the meantime, we will pick up after the official introduction with a couple of trades, one minor, one very major. As 31 Thoughts, the podcast is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali.
Toronto Maple Leafs have acquired defenseman Jake Muzzin from the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for forward Carl Grundstrom, the rights to Sean Durzi, who was a recent draft pick, and Toronto's first round pick in the 2019 NHL draft.
Faisal Kamisa. Take it away. 6 months?
I'm sorry, I had to. That's just a really good tweet.
The key is his ability to play the top end of our defense, play in all situations.
Obviously, growing up in Ontario, you know, everyone was a Leafs fan, and I was included. You know, it's kind of funny how life works, and here we are, and I'm coming back home to play for the team I rooted for growing up, so it's kind of ironic.
Should probably let you know as well, Rickard Granberg, the Swedish national coach, will be aboard here in a couple of moments. Really looking forward to talking to him about a number of things. The differences between hockey players in North America and Sweden, and the chances of him showing up behind the bench in the National Hockey League, and other issues that revolve around but are not exclusive to Swedish hockey players. So stay tuned for Rickard Granberg here on the podcast in a couple of moments. Meantime, Jake Muzzin is now ex of the Los Angeles Kings. He is now a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs on that blue line with one more year on his ticket at $4 million a copy, to which Elliot Friedman says blank.
I say I think it's a good trade for them. I mean, they're in it to win it right now, and they didn't take anything off of their roster. You know, I think one of the reasons that they did not go with some other possibilities, including the likes of Brett Pesce and Alex Pietrangelo, is that it was going to cost them pieces off their current roster. I don't know what the talks with Carolina turned out to be or not be, but it was going to involve a player, either Kapanen or Janssen or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have heard, and I do believe, that the talks with St. Louis for Pietrangelo involved William Nylander, which Toronto did not want to do. So that was something they were not willing to consider. As we saw, they could do Muzzin without taking off their current roster. And, you know, I think Muzzin was a guy that they were interested in, even though he's a left-hand shot. And what I've heard is they were Muzzin's most diligent and aggressive pursuer. I believe Montreal had been there. He was in the Pacioretty deal, the aborted deal. And I think Tampa was there, but when it really mattered, who was the team that was aggressive? It was Toronto, and he was the guy they targeted.
I was going to say, there must have been other teams. You mentioned Montreal, you mentioned Tampa as well. You do wonder about a team like the Boston Bruins. How much of this is the Maple Leafs got Muzzin and someone else that the Maple Leafs may face in the playoffs didn't?
I think there's something to that, but again, the only other teams I really heard were Tampa and Montreal. I'm sure there were others.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure that they were there.
Maple Leafs done?
I think they'll look for a right-hand D, but now it's dollar in, dollar out. Now, you can look at sites like Cap Friendly or Puckpedia, and you can say, okay, they've still got about, you know, some cap room, about $4 million in cap room, but what you don't want is Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews bonuses to go into next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Marner didn't go to the All-Star game eliminated one of those bonuses, but I think you're budgeting, I was told, for about $3.75 million, so you've got to keep that so it doesn't happen. So it's dollar in, dollar out for the Maple Leafs now.
Who does this help the most on that blue line? Some would make the point that this helps Riley.
Frederick Anderson.
Some would make the point that it helps Travis Dermott because it moves Ron Hainsey down to a lesser role, probably paired with him.
Yeah, probably. I think that's all true. I mean, the biggest question is who's going to play the right side on that Riley and Muzzin pairing? Like, who's it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Daryl Sutter, as we saw his quotes, was pretty emphatic that, you know, he's never done it before.
You know what I look at, if you can pause on that? I always go back to Mike Babcock's Detroit Red Wings squad,
yeah,
where everybody shot left. This was like the Soviet national team in the 70s where everybody except for maybe one player shot. Everyone's a left-hand shot,
you know,
with the Detroit Red Wings outside of, I think, maybe three.
I have an answer to that because I've asked him about it before. When he went to the Stanley Cup final with Anaheim in 2003, he had six lefty shots. And as you mentioned, Detroit, he had mostly lefty shots. And I just said, you know, what's the difference? And he said, it's much faster now. Mm. And he said, back then, you could get away with having guys on their offsides. Now, with the speed at the way the game's played, it is much more difficult. So he doesn't think it's a fair comparison. I've asked him about that before.
One of the interesting names that popped up in this, and it's a first-round draft pick going to the Los Angeles Kings, Carl Grundstrom goes the other way as well, and Sean Durzi. Sam Cosentino has been going on about Sean Durzi forever. Loves.
Oh, I should have called Sam. I didn't realize that.
Loves Sean Durzi. Been going on for,
Sam
I don't know
knows
why.
His guys.
He does too, and he loves Sean Durzi. Just involved in a big trade between Owen Sound and Guelph of the OHL. Why Durzi? And why not someone else, maybe a Marlies defenseman?
When the trade came down and the Leafs broke it, and I did a FaceTime with Carolyn. And, you know, I said I was surprised that Liljegren wasn't in the deal. I figured that that was the guy that the Kings would go after. They did ask about Rasmus Sandin, from what I've heard, and Toronto stuck to its promise that he was not going to be traded.
Right.
You know, I asked around. I said, why not Liljegren? And I have no desire to stomp on a kid. He's not even 20. He's got a long way to go. It just seems a lot of people are really down on him right now, that they just feel that he hasn't progressed to the level that was hoped and expected. Mm-hmm. I was actually, as I was driving down to tape the podcast today, I was listening to Ben Ennis and Justin Bourne on The Good Show on our flagship here in Toronto, the Fan 590. And Bourne was saying that one of the things with Liljegren is...
He just seemed so far off to me, and I'm not seeing those major strides taken. And, you know, you look at stats a lot of times, and for a defenseman, like, he's doing fine. He's got some numbers, you know, nothing too exceptional.
Well, I think for his age, he was putting up pretty impressive numbers at the American Hockey League.
Right, but the thing is, so much of that with skill guys like that, where you don't trust them to play physically in the game, is that they're putting them on the power play in a position where you're their only defenseman who's touching the puck with your best offensive forwards, and they're just racking up assists. You know, he only scored once last year. He had 16 assists. Yeah, he only has 2 goals this year, you know, another 6 assists. So to me, he's probably getting a lot of touches on the power play, and that to me doesn't indicate someone who's developed enough to play at the NHL level.
You know, again, he's 19 years old. This could all change, but it certainly looks like the opinion on him isn't as high as it was a year ago when he was taken in the first round. So there were a few teams who told me they were not surprised. Now, some teams were higher on Durzi than others, mm-hmm. but they said they weren't surprised the Kings would go in that direction.
Now that Jake Muzzin is a Maple Leaf, always curious what the reaction is, how the dominoes fall here. Okay, Toronto has made their move. Is Boston going to make their move? Does Tampa make their move? Does so-and-so make their move? How do dominoes fall now, do you think?
You know, I think Tampa, they've been looking for a right-hand shot D for a while now, and I still think they will continue to do it. I mean, they've been linked to Cody Ceci, we'll see. But I think Tampa does try to add on their blue line. Boston's an interesting one. I think they will try to add. I've heard them linked to Wayne Simmonds before. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do believe is they didn't like the rental last year they did with Rick Nash. Not that they have anything against Rick Nash. It just didn't work out. I mean, I'm not the only guy who's ever said this. I think several people who cover them have reported it, that Don Sweeney isn't too eager to do that again, right, which could affect the decision that they make. You know, Simmonds is an interesting one. I've heard the market on him is a bit slower developing than the Flyers expected. I think that's because of the logjam near the top, as everybody waits for Stone and Duchesne and Panarin. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that opens up a bit more later, but I could see Boston having interest in him. But like I said, Jeff, I think a lot of the market is being held up as we wait to see what those three guys and those two teams decide to do.
Let's get there then. Duchesne and Stone, it's the weekly update. What's happening with the Ottawa Senators, big boys?
I believe they were supposed to either meet or talk again this week, Duchesne and Pat Brisson and the team. Nick had the offer out there. I hear one day people say, he'll sign. The next day people say, no, he won't. You know, I think Duchesne has really wrestled with it too at times. My belief is he gets traded, but I'm not like, it's not like I'm going onto my betting app on my phone and putting money down on it. I lean towards that way, but it's not the most confident lean I've ever had. Stone. I'm more confident that Stone gets signed. I think he's invested in that organization. He's been there. I think they've talked to him about the captaincy. You know, it's just such a wild card. It is. You just never know what's going to happen. And I've been told that by another player on the team that Stone has been particularly careful about talking about it because he understands the volatility of the whole situation, and he just doesn't want he just doesn't want news about it. He wants it to be as smooth as possible.
Could Pittsburgh be a fit for Matt Duchesne?
I have thought that, but the Penguins. What do they have to trade for Matt Duchesne?
Well, not exactly a secret. They'd love to relieve themselves of Derek Brassard and that contract.
And I think that's going to happen.
I get that. They made the Oleksiak move to free up spot and cap space.
Yeah.
So,
but what do they have? Like, you know what Ottawa's going to want.
For for someone like Matt Duchene as on a rental, they will want a first-round draft pick.
Pittsburgh
has
those.
And they will want a young player.
There's Addison, the young kid who plays out west. He's probably Pittsburgh's best prospect. And Pittsburgh, I think, will go for it. But I just wonder if it's enough. Like, if there's a bidding war that develops out there. Like, the other team I see in the same position is San Jose. I think that, in theory, they could always use a major upgrade. I think they're really good, and I think they could use a big upgrade. Or would like to have a big upgrade just to make themselves even better in a top-heavy division. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, their first round, they tied up a pick in Evander Kane. They tied up a pick in Erik Karlsson. Eventually, you reach the point where you say, we can't do it anymore. And it's not that Pittsburgh doesn't have the will, but I just wonder if they're going to have the ability. I think they're still big in on Ferland, and I could see him being a more likely target. Like, the teams I wonder in all this is Nashville, Winnipeg, Vegas, Tampa. Although Tampa's
these are all heavies.
Tight.
These are all not teams that are just trying to have a run. These are teams you mentioned that want to win the cup.
Yes, and they've got the picks or the prospects to do it.
You mentioned Michael Ferland.
Yep.
A lot of people can't figure out why Carolina wouldn't want this player in their lineup. Wildly popular, specifically of recent note, whether it's, you know, the fights, the demonstration, you can play a top six role.
Yep.
Why not? I saw, you know, Jordan Martinook gets signed to a two-year contract.
Yep.
That's a little bit of sandpaper and snarl in the lineup as well, but why not Ferland?
And there's a big dispute about how much they've discussed, if any. I just think concept-wise, Carolina doesn't think they can do it. Mm-hmm. Teravainen just signed for 5.4. Yep. They're trying to sign Aho. I just feel that they feel they can't do it.
Back to Pittsburgh quickly. How did you read the Jamie Oleksiak?
Cap space. Three. You said it.
That's just it.
Yeah. And they also have a lot of D. Like, Toronto's going to have to do something at some point. They got a ton of D.
But here's the thing, though, that I keep coming back to, and Jim Rutherford knows this as someone that's done it before a couple of times. If you're a team that's planning on having a long Stanley Cup run, the one thing that we've learned is you better have a lot of defense hanging around. I mean, we work with Brian Burke. Ask Berkey about 2007. We got to Jackman,
Carolina,
and Huskins, and DePenta pretty quickly
in
those playoff rounds. If you're planning on having a run, why let go of a depth guy? Isn't that what everybody loads up on?
Don't forget, Justin Schultz coming back. They got a lot of D there. They do have bodies. And the other thing, too, is, though it's interesting, I think they've looked at moving Mata for some time, too. So, I mean, we'll see. You know, I believe Rutherford knows what he's doing.
And he likes to make it big.
So, that to me, that's a cap space move.
Anything with Alex Edler? I was under the belief, many of us were, that Edler and the Vancouver Canucks were meeting over All-Star break.
You know, I just haven't heard anything. I heard it's been really quiet, and maybe that's the way that the Canucks like it. I'm sure that's the way the Canucks like it. People could be lying to me, but I haven't heard there's been a lot going on there. I just think that the biggest question the Canucks are going to have is term, even more than money. How much term is he going to want?
Given that Travis Green has this team flirting with a playoff position right now, does this at all complicate what Jim Benning thinks leading into trade deadline?
I don't know
the expectation was that they're going to be in a playoff hunt. No one will say it publicly in Vancouver for the obvious reasons, but I don't know that anyone in that organization thought that Travis Green was going to get them to this spot.
Don't forget that one of the reasons that Trevor Linden was out was because
the vision, the strategy.
His vision was, we got to build, we're not there yet, and there were people in the organization who said, we are there. So I would assume that whether they believed it or not, they knew that this was potentially, or believed that this could potentially be a possibility. I'm not mortgaging futures if I'm the Canucks.
I don't think so either, but are they friskier than we thought they might be?
I think they're looking.
At trade deadline.
I think that ownership always looks. Like, whenever a star player is available, like, hey, P.K. Subban, they were there.
Yeah.
I think Erik Karlsson last summer, they looked into it. So, they're going to look.
I don't know the answer to this. I don't know that you know the answer to this. There's probably only one person that knows the answer to this question. How good does Lou Lamoriello think the Islanders are?
Well, he's not telling us. Remember,
but he'll tell us by February 25th, Elliot. Yeah.
2012, I worked on that Eastern Conference Final between Rangers and Devils. That was the first series I did with New Jersey that year. So the day before that it began, the Devils were practicing at their facility in Newark, and I asked if I could just go meet with them. And, you know, he invited me to his office for a little bit, and we chatted. And I asked him about philosophy and getting Zdlicky, and he goes, you only do that when you think you can win. Mm-hmm. And they ended up going to the Stanley Cup final that year before they lost to the Kings. You know, I've always remembered that. You know, his philosophies don't change a ton. I look at his team and I wonder if he says, do we think we can win? Not that he's going to tell us. And, you know, the other question I have there is, you kind of have an idea how much Bobrovsky's going to cost you, and we've all kind of thought that the Islanders were the favorite for Bobrovsky's service.
I wonder if that's different now.
Well, like, Leonard and Greiss.
This is night and day from last year. And last year was the Islanders scored all the goals and got none of the saves, and now it's flipped and they're tops in the Metro.
And the thing is, like, you know Leonard better than anyone else, right? So you know what he's capable of and where he is in his life. You know, I'm just wondering if that's a bet you make as opposed to Bobrovsky.
So far, it's been a home run.
It has been a home
Leonard
run.
Leonard and the New York Islanders.
Yeah.
And listen, it was a Hail Mary pass, not unlike what Cliff Fletcher did with Devan Dubnyk with Minnesota. That was a, we need something.
Let's try.
Let's throw for the end zone here.
Yep.
And it worked for Minnesota, and so far it's worked for the Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of with you on that one. Hey, anything new with, we spent a lot of time with them last week. Anything new with Edmonton?
You know, Sakara's coming back, and apparently he's getting close to a conditioning stint, and he's on long-term injured. They're at the cap, and they're going to have to move money to get him out there. So I'm curious to see, you know, what they're going to be able to do. That's number one. Number two, I think they're going to take their time on their GM search.
Mm-hmm.
They could have had Mark Hunter right now. I really believe that. If he was the guy, he could be in there today. But I think they want to wait. And
end of the season?
Yeah, I think also they want to talk to Kelly McCrimmon, and I just can't see Vegas letting him go now. It's too important a time. I just think that they're in it to make it. I think they're trying to be really careful. I think they're trying to be really smart about it. They know their fan base is terrified they're going to make a bad move.
Yeah.
And I think they get that. But, you know, I do think something has to come because, you know, they really believe in Sakara. They wonder what kind of player he can be. They're hopeful that after all those injuries, he'll be something. But I know they really believe in his personality on the blue line.
How aggressive are they at trade deadline?
I think it depends on where they are, really, right?
I think there's expectation that, I mean, everyone's going to kind of be in that same spot.
Yes, no one, I mean, no, how many of those teams are falling out? You know, actually, as a name, I'm not saying this particularly because we just talked about Edmonton, but another name I heard today was Pominville from Buffalo. He's in the last year of his contract. He hasn't played a ton, a bunch of games lately where he's been under 10 minutes. So I wonder if he gets another crack to go somewhere and take another run.
Anything else outside of Pominville in Buffalo? Dallin's heating up big time.
Oh, yeah. I think the question is, you know, what do they go with Skinner? Can they make a deal?
Mm-hmm. You feeling $9 million on that? Earlier on this year, that number came out, and everyone kind of said, whoa. Put a leash on that puppy.
Somewhere between 8 and 9.
But he's scoring goals like crazy.
That's how you get paid. I think somewhere between 8 and 9.
Rangers, before a trade deadline, we'll do one of those where everyone's at podcast. But Kreider, Hayes, Zuccarello, those are the obvious
candidates.
You know,
I got to tell you something. I'd be going, if I was
McQuaid.
Yeah, McQuaid for sure. If I was an NHL team that thought I could win and needed some edge, I would be going after Kreider. But I could see the Rangers wanting to keep him. Like, this is supposed to be a one-year thing, and then they're going to be in the free agent market.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what they're going to do there. But I really like Kreider. I like him a lot, and I think he's a guy like who just runs over people, and you need that. I think Calgary might have some interest in Zuccarello or something like that there. As a depth guy.
Really?
Yeah. I think Calgary is looking for some depth on the wing.
Edmonton at one point.
Edmonton definitely looked at it.
Zuccarello or Kreider?
Zuccarello.
There was some interest.
I mean, they might have
Kreider.
Done Kreider too, but I think they looked at Zuccarello also.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy we haven't mentioned from the Rangers is Hayes.
Well, you've mentioned Colorado before.
Yes, but I'm not sure they're going to do that. And I think also when Duchesne gets set, then Hayes is going to come up and he'll get some interest.
What is your takeaway before we get to Rickard Granberg here? I can't believe it's taken this deep into the podcast that we've mentioned it, but what was your takeaway from All-Star Weekend in San Jose? The women kind of stole the show.
Yeah, well, they did.
They did steal the show.
They did steal the show. First of all, I loved being in good weather.
Jerk.
You know,
get lost.
So on,
move along.
On Monday, or was it Tuesday? What day was it? Was it yesterday, Tuesday? Well, it snowed Monday, right? So we all shoveled Tuesday. It took me 3 hours to shovel my driveway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a shoveler. We have a snowblower, but I don't want to use it. I want the challenge. And about 2 hours into this, I'm like, you're an idiot. And my wife thought I was an idiot, too.
Yeah.
Being in good weather was really nice.
Nice. Okay, I'm very happy for you.
I don't complain about All-Star Weekend. you know, I know there's a lot of other people do it. I understand why it's there. I've called it a necessary evil. And someone from the league laughed when they heard I referred to it as that. I just thought this year the skills competition was flat, aside from Kendall Coyne Schofield and Brianna Decker.
Yeah.
They have to change it. Now, 2022, we're all hoping they're in China, so no All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
2021, in the CBA conversations, the international calendar, the players proposed a World Cup in February of that year, and the league said no.
I can't see.
The league said no.
Have a...
But what I do think that could happen is the old Ryder Cup idea, where it's North America versus the world,
mm-hmm.
and you pick a city and you play it. And I know in the past they've talked about London, so I would like to see that idea. I think it's a good idea. So next year, St. Louis could be the last year of the current format, and I think they should try. Now, I have to think after this year, what Coyne Schofield did and what Decker did, the women are going to be entered in the competitions.
More of them.
I would assume so.
Yep.
And you know what? I just want to say one thing about Decker. Like, I saw some people out there saying, well, she only got a good time because there was no pressure on her. She wasn't competing. I don't buy that
kidding?
At all. If you're an Olympic-level athlete, which she is, you want to do well. It's not like you're going out there fooling around because you're a demonstrator. You want to go out and show everybody in front of a packed building and all these players that you can do this. That's the stupidest thing ever.
Decker, for sure. Kendall Coyne Schofield, we had her on Hockey Central at noon on Monday, and I asked her about that. Were there any nerves? She's been part of huge games before, World Championships, Olympics, been successful. How nervous were you? And she said she was...
I was extremely nervous. It was... right when I got on the ice, I went to Connor McDavid. I'm like, are you nervous? And he's like, yeah, I'm a little nervous. So I was like, okay, good, because I'm extremely nervous.
Everybody is. Everybody's watching, and there's that expectation. And it's one thing for Connor, trying to win fastest skater 3 years in a row. And then there's Kendall Coyne Schofield.
Yeah.
Who, if you lose an edge, if you blow it, then all of a sudden there's fuel for the naysayers. That is a huge amount of pressure on that young lady.
And also, don't forget that Heiskanen had blown a tire.
Yes.
And I think that affected some of the NHL players. They were looking at it like, no, like, I'm not doing that because I don't want what almost happened to him to happen to me. So she wants to prove herself, and she wants to prove she belongs, and she's seen what happens, and she's like, I don't care. I'm going right
going for it.
I'm going right for it. So I think that the women will be in next year, or more women will be in as competitors. So I think they'll be there. But I also think, and I've been beating this drum for years, the alumni, Ally Afraidy, Adam Oates was there because he was a guest of Mark Scheifele's.
Yeah.
He could do the passing competition. And still the specialists. Like, we've talked about this. One
yeah.
more time, Chara Weber. And I do believe that was discussed this year. But they decided not to do it. It was for, like, all-stars only. But now that you're opening it up, I think you can bring them in. And let's give Connor McDavid the challenge. Get the 8 fastest guys. Even bring that guy in from the AHL who skated 12 seconds. Like, give him the best challenge.
Anthony Greco.
Yes. Bring him in. Bring them all in.
Bring them all in.
Bring in the ringers.
Listen, I'm with you, yeah. And trick shot competition. Robbie Schramp, come on down one more time. Watching Kendall Coyne Schofield.
And by the
skate.
Way, also, I like Kevin Bieksa's idea that in that passing accuracy,
yes.
if you can't do it in a certain number of pucks, you get a 5 or 10 second time penalty.
I'm watching the fastest skater, and I do it every single year. But this year, watching Kendall Coyne Schofield skate, the way her legs were moving,
mm-hmm.
my hip flexors were sore, and I just sat and watched. It was outstanding how quick she moved her legs. It was painful to watch it.
Yeah, as a guy who doesn't really exercise much, I didn't feel any pain.
Okay, very good. On that, we'll take a break. Come back with Rickard Granberg next. One Thoughts is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first 6-function multi-pro tailgate. Nets sliding around on the way to pond hockey use the built-in load stop to help keep them in place. Loading what seems like half a team's worth of bags, the tailgate also turns into a step for easier access and has an inner gate that flips down for unloading all the gear you can fit. GMC Sierra Denali, we are professional grade. Elliot, I have been looking forward to this for a while. For the longest time, we've talked about the next wave of players. We've talked about the next wave of managers. We've talked about the next wave of employees at various levels of NHL teams. And the one spot that we haven't probably given enough attention to is the bench boss, the head coach. Normally in the NHL, this has been populated by North American men. You wonder what is going to be next, and if the next wave of coaches is going to come from overseas. To that, we welcome aboard Rickard Granberg, who's the national coach of Team Sweden, who joins us on the podcast now. Rickard, thank you so much for joining us. I know the NHL has dipped its beak into the fountain rather gently before. Ulf Samuelsson, certainly of recent note. But why, in your estimation, has there been a shortage or a lack of European coaches behind the bench in the National Hockey League? And welcome to the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jeff. Great long question to start out with. But I think it's a tough question to answer because I'm not in the position of hiring and the coaches in the National Hockey League. So it's tough for me to kind of dig into that one. I know that there's a lot of great coaches in Europe, that's for sure. You know, I've been fortunate to coach the national team now for a few years, and I'm coaching against some of the best European coaches. I'm talking about the Czechs, the Russians, and the Finns especially. But there's some great hockey minds over here. So I think, yeah, there's a pool of coaches that NHL definitely should tap into.
Now, Jeff, I think there is a reason that Rickard is on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So earlier on this year, we were talking about Alpo Suominen.
Yes.
And I brought up the point that he told John Davidson, then working for Hockey Night in Canada, that it would take half the season for the team, the Blackhawks, to get used to his system. And I said that was a reason that maybe some European head coaches wouldn't get a second chance. And Rickard is represented by a guy by the name of Neil Glassberg, who lives in Toronto, who we both know. And Neil reached out to me and said, Rickard Granberg heard that, and he is not pleased with what you said. So, Rickard, I'm giving you an opportunity here
to come
right out and tell me why I am totally clueless on that particular point.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. It sounds like a pretty long time to install a system. It takes half a year to install a system. And there's a difference, too. That was a few years ago, you know, it's a lot of things have happened since then. I think in particular, I think, you know, with the access of, you know, back in my days, you know, the only time we watched NHL hockey was really in hockey school, a Super 8 tape of, you know, Stanley Cup finals a few years before that. So nowadays you have access to more or less everything. And I think, you know, kids growing up today, so obviously if you're playing hockey in Sweden, Czech or in Russia or in Finland, I mean, the biggest goal is to play in National Hockey League. So I think, you know, that said, I think, you know, the hockey world it's a lot smaller nowadays. I think there's a hybrid world of influences from all kinds of culture, hockey cultures. I know that the Swedish style of hockey that some people refer to is a mix, is a blend of a lot of influences from other nations. So I think nowadays you're talking about a hybrid world of hockey. And I'm a firm believer a structure and a culture shouldn't take a half a year to install. It should be quicker than that for sure. And I think the stretch right now from European hockey and NHL hockey is not that great.
I was hoping you let into that because I'm more curious now, more so than ever, not how things are different, but more how they are similar. Once upon a time, it was, oh, the Swedes do the torpedo. It's 2-2-1. In North America, it's the opposite. It's a trap. It's 1-2-2. And the difference is obvious. But here we are now, Rickard, in 2019. I'm not as much interested in differences as similarities. How are the styles similar from Sweden to North America?
Well, that's what the Federation was so curious about because I played college hockey and you know, obviously I coached over in North America when the Swedish Ice Hockey Federation were approaching me about to start working with them and a start of a new movement of development when it comes to Swedish hockey. And, you know, I'm talking about 12, 13 years ago. I lived comfortably in North America back then and was coaching the Western Hockey League, actually, the Spokane Chiefs, when they approached me about actually coming over and helping them out. North American influences, and back then, you know, big thing was the video, you know, for us to break down different videos, you know, which wasn't that great and big back in the days in Sweden and European hockey, and also the structure. I think, you know, when talking to a coach back then, a Swedish coach back then, you're talking to him as a trainer of ice hockey, not as much as a coach. And, you know, that was a big thing for them to bring me over and be involved in developing coaches. And by doing that, obviously, I never coached in Sweden back then. You know, obviously, I had no idea, you know, what to expect except, working the way that I think the North American, obviously a lot of North American influences because I never coached over in Sweden before. You know, that I picked up a lot of things that's great with Swedish hockey. Now, talking about the way the ice practices, the skill development, obviously, is well known. Which I think, obviously, North American hockey, USA Hockey has been over a few times. We have an exchange for those guys, and as well as Hockey Canada, looking at how we develop in skills. So that's what builds bridges.
Rickard, how many times have you interviewed with NHL teams in the last couple of years?
I would say, interview and interview. I mean, I said probably a handful of times I've been sitting down with different NHL teams and talked. Specifically, but a little bit of future, talking about everything from, you know, different positions with the team. And about a handful of times.
Like, was there one or a particular situation that you thought that you would be in, whether as a head coach or as an assistant or something like that?
Yeah, a couple of times. And it's been a little bit of a situation where obviously I'm under contract. I've been under contract last 3 years as a head coach for the national team. So, obviously I wanted to fulfill my duties under that contract. And this year I decided not to, they offered me a contract extension. I decided not to take that, but to look around the corner a little bit. And obviously NHL is the best league in the world. So of course I want to look at that avenue for sure.
Well, what's your view right now on positions? Right wing, left wing, center, right D, left D. Elliot and I talk a lot about, the idea that, positionless hockey is on the horizon. Positions are only where you line up. And, I look at someone like, the success of Elias Pettersson, who last year played as a winger and comes in this year in the Vancouver Canucks and is flourishing as a center and will win the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year. Are we at a place in hockey, in your mind, where positions, as we've traditionally known them, mean less than ever?
I think that's a great question, Jeff. I think we're steering away from that. I think we're steering away from, up and down the wingers, the responsible centerman in the middle, the defensive defenseman, the offensive defenseman. It's more of totality in hockey, And I think the way we're really trying to break, the hardest thing right now, I think, to do in hockey, especially in national hockey, I feel, is to score goals.
Right.
And how do you score goals is to be creative, looking outside the box. And that's something that I feel is one of my strengths. I'm always trying to challenge the truth, so we obviously been fortunate enough to work with some great, great defensemen, especially that can really join the rush and almost play as a fourth forward or be really involved in offensive play. Well, right there, you have a dimension of hockey that, maybe is not that common, and then we've been obviously really, really successful doing that. So I think to answer your question, Jeff, I think definitely going steering away from just up and down wingers and defensemen. I think it's more of a totality in hockey.
Okay, I want to get some general stuff. Rickard, if you were coaching and you had to pick one Swedish player to lead your team to a game you had to win to save your house, who are you taking?
Wow, that's a tremendously tough question to answer. They say that obviously goaltenders are half the team, so let's pick a goaltender then, Henrik Lundqvist.
I can't argue with that choice. I grew up, I'm 48. Boreas Salming was my favorite player as a kid. So I always take in the prime Boreas Salming, but I can't argue with Lundqvist. I can't argue with that.
Number five in Detroit was pretty good last time I checked, too.
Yeah, I mean, Lidstrom. I mean, who's arguing with Lidstrom, too? But I admit I have a Salming bias. I always did. You have a long North American connection. Is the average Swedish player different to coach than your average North American player?
Yeah, of course, it's probably, if you generalize it, I think it'd be different. But I think nowadays, the world, and especially, places like Canada, U.S., or Sweden, I mean, we're very similar in a lot of ways. But of course, could be a little bit of difference. And I think, for myself, to been around Americans, Canadians, and Europeans, I think that's a pretty good combination of understand what certain people coming from. So there's similarities, but there's also different aspects of individuals for sure.
Rickard, I can recall a few years ago in Kelowna, at a CHL NHL Top Prospects game. After the game, I had a conversation with one very specific, very well-known agent. And I said to this agent, I said, you know what, of all your players, of all of your clients, I've never heard anyone complain about any of them. Why is that? And he said, I have a very specific recruiting philosophy. I'll call it my 2S rule. I recruit from the two most low-maintenance places in the world, and they both start with S. One's Saskatchewan, and the other is Sweden. I can't ask you about Saskatchewan, but I will ask you about Sweden. Are Swedes the most low-maintenance players in the world?
It's funny. I do have a little bit of connections with Saskatchewan, too. I got some really good friends in Regina, especially.
Oh, but, good.
I think we're coming from a culture where the collective is really important. I think one of the reasons we're really good in team sports period, I think it's because we understand working in a collective. It could be a little bit of a socialistic background, if you like, but I think that's one reason. We have a different culture in that way, for sure.
I guess the last question I have for you, Ricard, is give me the pitch. You're going to sit down. You're talking to teams. What do you bring that makes a difference?
I think they're looking for an outside perspective of, you know, I'm working with not only North American players, but, European players, and combine them in the locker room. And they can understand where those guys are coming from. I think, you know, one of my biggest strengths is just the structure and building the structure around the team. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned, you know, coaching in Sweden is what Swedes are really good in is allowing the players to think out in the ice. The coach doesn't sit on all the answers, you know. Mm-hmm. Let the players make decisions on the ice. Versus, you know, when I came up and was a young coach, I had all the answers. I needed to give the players all the answers all the time. Versus maybe reverse it sometime. Ask questions. Be curious in what they're doing. So communication is a huge point for me. And I think I can bring a little bit outside perspective also on the structure and the tactics, because there are some differences when it comes to international hockey. I mean, the Russians playing a certain way, the Czechs are playing a certain way, the Swedes are playing a certain way. It's not the same thing. And I think if you look at that combination of, you know, different tactics, why not try something different than what everyone else is doing in the National Hockey League? So that's the 2-minute tour of our Gomes coaching philosophy.
That's a good resume. Right,
you're hired.
That's
you're
a good
hired.
Word. That's a good
it.
Cover letter.
Done.
Yes.
Well done. Ricard, listen, it's been a pleasure. We hope we can catch up with you again. Please keep in touch, and we'll get you back on the podcast. And best of luck in whatever is next for your career.
Well, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Thank you, Ricard.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I made a bet with Heather Hiscox once when I was doing CBC News Network. I was doing morning sports. It was a Super Bowl bet. And the loser had to surrender his phone to the other person for an hour. Would you ever do that? Would you ever take that bet?
In the
loser gives up their phone for
I'd
an
love
hour.
To, but not during the season. Look, I'm paid to try and be on top of things.
That was Ricard Gronberg, European coaches in the NHL, not as assistants, but as head coaches. Overdue?
Well, I think that if he comes in, it's probably going to be as an assistant first. I don't know if he's going to jump right into a head coaching job. Look, I'm for anything that makes people better. And there's no question the sport's changing. It's opening up its eyes to different things and new things. And I think at the end of the day, I don't care where you're from. When I was a kid, Grant Fuhr drafted by the Edmonton Oilers.
From the Victoria Cougars.
I believe it was In Goal magazine or something like that, or Goal magazine, one of those old magazines.
Yeah, I remember Goal, yeah.
Yeah, that did an article on Grant Fuhr being a black goalie. And there was a quote in there from Glenn Sather where he basically said, I don't care if Grant Fuhr is purple. I only care if he stops the puck.
To which Mitch Hedberg would say, hold on, we got to draw the line somewhere. Purple people? Sorry, I love Mitch Hedberg. Go ahead.
Purple people eaters. And I subscribe to that theory. I don't care where you're from or what your background is. Can you do the job? And if you can do the job, there's room for you.
The one area, and that's one we talked about at the beginning in my long preamble, talking about areas where we need to see new voices and see new people to get new ideas.
Yep.
You feel that way about bench bosses? I feel that way about the media as well. Hockey media, whether it's studio, whether it's truck, doesn't matter. We don't have European voices represented at all. Bobby Holík, once upon a time when he retired, sort of flirted with it a little bit.
Kimmo Tiivanen was at the All-Star game.
Was he?
Yeah, working for Finnish TV.
That's not North American TV. Like, where is that European voice on Canadian / American broadcasts? They make up so much of the NHL.
This discussion could go into a lot of different areas because, you know, people would listen to what you just said and said there's a lot of different voices that should be on hockey broadcasts.
True.
But I think one of the toughest things is to get ex-players. You know, in the NBA, all the ex-players, they want to be on TV. And they make a ton of money. In the NHL, not a lot of the biggest star ex-players want to be on TV, and the money is a different scale. And, you know, for example, Kevin Bieksa, who's done a few broadcasts with us and was in between the benches on All-Star Weekend, he wants to be a dad. And how is that a bad thing? And can you get guys to commit to the job? You know, for example, a guy like a lot of European players, how many European players stay in North America after they're done?
That is a very interesting question. And hang on, and specifically, although there have been a couple, Alfredson, Samuelson.
You know, Peter Sikoras coaches Gary Bettman's kid.
Yeah, I know.
In New Jersey.
There are a few that run camps in Florida.
Yep.
Specifically Swedes, though, for the purpose of having
Rickard
Gronberg. Yes, he does.
Yep.
Rickard Gronberg, just on the podcast. Generally, and this is a wide brush statement here, when Swedes are done their NHL career, they go to Sweden and they stay.
Yeah. They I mean, Alfredson's still here.
That's what I'm saying. There's a couple. Alfredson and Samuelson.
I think he'd be dynamite on TV.
I think he'd be dynamite as well. Great quote. Delivers well. Looks fantastic. All of it. But generally, Swedes go and they stay home. Why not? Sweden's a wonderful place. And if I were Swedish, I'd want to get home as soon as possible and stay there. Thank you very much. But generally, they just they go and they don't come back.
Here it is, too. Like, so imagine a Venn diagram. And for those of you who don't know what a Venn diagram is, Google it.
So you've got, Elliot's not going to tell you.
Well, it's basically it's
don't worry about it. Go on.
Circle
we know
a
what a Venn
of circles,
diagram
so
is.
Here you go. So imagine one of the circles is retired European NHL players.
Yeah.
And the other circle is people who want to commit the time to work at TV. How big do you think that intersection is?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. But I mean, what I like about the NBA guys is they realize in a lot of ways, and you can speak with way more authority than I can on this one, they realize that by staying on television, they keep their quote-unquote brand alive.
Yeah.
And it leads to other avenues. Regardless of
the mentality is totally
regardless
different.
Of what you
totally
earn different. Working television in the NBA, outside of that, staying on TV opens a lot of other doors for you.
I agree.
With your personality on display. Let's get to a couple of hashtag Ask31s. First one comes from Shailen Brady. This is a good one. How do you two feel about the new player and puck tracking technology coming full-time in the NHL next season? I love hearing all the different opinions on it.
Well, I'm for anything that improves your enjoyment of the game. If you like watching that kind of thing or like studying that kind of thing, I think it's excellent. I like the fact that the league understands that there are some fans who don't want to watch that, and that if you are the person who just wants to watch a relatively uncluttered screen with your drink of choice and your food of choice, they're not going to take that away from you. But if you are someone who wants to watch a second screen with all kinds of stuff on it, that option is going to be eventually there. Now, the one thing that Shailen and everybody else has to understand is I don't think it's guaranteed for the start of next year. They have been a bit guarded on when it'll exactly come out because they know they can't get it wrong. So it might not be ready for the start of next season. I'm curious about the gambling aspect of it, the VR virtual reality aspect of it. I think that's really cool. I think there are people out there who know that they can participate in a game from Connor McDavid's point of view, and that data will allow that to happen. When I was at the All-Star game last week and I went to the House of Chell, which was their gamer-activated mansion for the weekend. Like puck and player tracking, this is stuff that is totally out of my expertise. and we are barely scratching the surface of the world we are going into.
See, to me, more information means more coverage because there's more things to talk about. And outside of what you may, because a lot of this speaks to second screen for me.
Yes.
Like when I'm watching a hockey game, I want it as clean as possible. Right, I want Zen Rock Garden. That's what I want. I don't need a whole ton of drop downs. I don't need flashes of things. I just want a clean look. So this to me says second screen for that information. But with that information, this may sound very selfish coming from me.
Okay. Well, you're a selfish guy.
That's true. Oh, look, there's my navel. what this could do is enhance the studio experience because all that information becomes available to us in studio as you go to the intermission.
Yeah.
Because now there's a whole new field of information that we can use to discuss what we just saw for 20 minutes.
You know, here's an interesting question for the people who are listening to this podcast. In the first 2 years of the New Deal here at Rogers, we went heavily into the analytics. And they got feedback that said the audience did not like that. Too many numbers. And when I've told that to certain people, they're like, what? Why? We love that. That's silly. That's ridiculous. But there are a lot of people who absolutely hate them. And I'm wondering if we're going to have to get into a situation, Jeff, where there's almost two different shows.
Hang on. See, when I see that, when I hear that, I say, okay, that's the bathwater, but what about the baby? Because I don't think that...
I don't like the baby either.
I don't think... Okay, you want to get rid of all... I don't think that information is a bad thing. I think if it's presented as math, it's a bad thing. But I've always maintained that whomever can take that information that we all see on various blogs and on various Twitter feeds and make it palatable and presentable for television wins.
Yes, I agree with that.
But I don't think you discard it altogether and say, well, they don't want analytics, so let's just talk about goals, assists, hits, and blocked shots.
Right, like
and
everything else, we have to find the middle ground.
Man, I've talked to so many people in the quote-unquote analytics community about this because I've had those same conversations. Oh, this is great. This is wonderful. We love it. Like, no, on television, people don't want to feel like they're in math class.
Right.
Make it presentable for TV. Great question, Shailen. Thanks for sending that one in. This one comes to us from Steve Ness. Trent Frederick.
Yeah.
Had a huge fight in his NHL game.
Now back is shoving with Sherratt. And Myers pairs off with Frederick, and Tanev wants a piece of Frederick. Frederick's willing to go. Frederick with the uppercut gets Tanev's helmet off. Oh, oh, look at him go. Welcome to Boston, Trent Frederick. Just rock 'em, sock 'em, robots. Listen to the crowd at TD Garden.
What stands out to you as some of your most memorable NHL debuts?
Oof.
I got one.
Okay.
And I've always had a question about it too. I don't know the year, and I hope I'm getting the players that got the assists correct. Daniel Winnick.
Okay.
In his NHL debut with the Coyotes, scored a goal. And it was assisted by two players that were also making their NHL debuts. One of them was Martin Hanzel. And the other, and I know I'm going to get audited on Twitter instantly when this podcast goes up, I think was Craig Weller. I'm not sure. So they all got their first points on the same goal in their first game. And my question is, who gets the puck?
The guy who scores.
Guy who scores is getting it for sure. You're not carving that puck up and everyone gets a third.
Well, you know, you could do that.
This is hockey after all.
That's more unselfish. Look.
That would be my most memorable debut. Three guys... all involved in their first goal on their very first game at the same time.
I don't know how anyone could argue with Austin Matthews.
Oh, the four against Ottawa?
Yeah.
Center to front. They score! They score! Austin Matthews opens the scoring. Welcome to the NHL. He scored to the net. He scores! Austin Matthews banks it off the post and in. Never mind one. The tap two. And the ice is littered with hats here in Ottawa. My goodness. Austin Matthews, four goals. Do you believe this? Holy mackinac, the kid's on fire.
And since there were so few teams playing, what I remember about that night was Marion Gaborik tweeting and Chris Letang tweeting, and guys were like, welcome to our beer league. That was what made that night so special, was all the NHLers watching the game and saying, oh my God.
Yeah.
Not only did you think Matthews was going to be great because he scored 4 goals, but we interviewed him post game. Christine Simpson was working that game. And first of all, we interviewed someone from the losing team, which almost never happens. And B, he was mad because his check scored the overtime winner for Ottawa. So, I mean, how can you go away from that one?
You know who made those moments as well? Mom.
Yeah.
The shots of Mom was outstanding in that one. I'm always fascinated with the cup of coffee player, the one game guy, Dean Morton.
Yeah.
Okay. NHL official.
Blair Mackesy, I think, was a one game guy.
But here's the thing about Dean Morton. In his one game up, scored a goal, and then never played in the NHL again. What did I do wrong? Gets his one call-up, scores a goal, and that's it? That would be another debut that I would
Well, you just go through
of.
Ken Reed's book.
Candy's Cup of Coffee.
Remember, Calgary had a
awesome.
Guy. I remember, someone will tell me about it, Gord Wapple or something like that. And he played on a Hockey Night in Canada game on a Saturday night between Calgary and Montreal, and it was on for some reason in Toronto. And he had like a goal and assist. He scored a beautiful goal. And I think he played 2 games, never heard from him again. Like, someone's going to tell me what happened, but I remember that guy. I remember thinking, this guy's a star.
You know, it was a good question for Ken Reed then, too, because he did the book about players that people that only had one game in the NHL, the cup of coffee. I'm curious, not just who played the one game, but who played the fewest minutes. No, who played the fewest seconds in the NHL? Find me that guy who played like 2 seconds. You know, there were the backup goalie that came on to clean up for 5 seconds, or the tough guy that came on and fought 2 seconds into his shift, and that was it. That was his only game in the NHL and his only minutes/seconds. I like giving Ken Reed some homework.
Why not?
Okay, from Silas.
Okay.
Do you ever see a time where the Swedish league could have a TV presence in North America? Hardcores would watch. I would watch. You would watch.
Yeah.
Could you see it?
I think it's probably more likely on. I mean, I don't see why not, but you got to think it's probably more online than anything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can watch those games now online. I don't know why like a network would necessarily pick those up now, because the younger generation, they stream everything, right?
Yeah.
So you can probably get it.
With North American commentary, though.
Oh, well, I don't know. That's a good one.
I'd watch.
Well, of course I would watch.
You'd watch.
Set up a studio. The only problem with that is Matt Marstrom probably produces those games, and it's always a big food budget when he's around.
Matthew Scott, is there a chance? Oh, I love this question. Is there a chance that Steve Yzerman wins GM of the Year if Tampa has the season everyone is predicting, even though he's not the GM anymore? I love it.
I know why this question's there, because Jeff loves the chaos aspect of it.
I have an example I want to bring up, too.
I think that's real. I say no, but I still think it's hilarious.
2010, the Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
It's fantastic. Oh, first time since 1961 in the GM of the Year voting, and other GMs vote for this award. One GM voted for Dale Talent.
Yeah, I'm not surprised there would be that.
I don't know who it was, but one Don Maloney won it that year, running the then Phoenix, now Arizona Coyotes. But one person voted for someone who wasn't the GM of the Stanley Cup winning team.
I know for Coach of the Year, which is voted by the Broadcasters Association, I don't have a vote with them, but I know in the past it's been asked internally if you could vote for an assistant coach. I believe Sean Burke was one of the guys who came up when he did a great job with Ilya Brizgalov in Arizona. Or maybe even was Devin Dubnyk. I know that's come up before. Can you vote for an assistant coach? But it's never really gained any traction.
I would love it if Yzerman won it this year if Tampa wins. Come on. Elliot's just rolling his eyes at me saying, okay, wrap this thing up. I'm sick of your nonsense. I like the
chaos imagery of it.
You just want a good story. You're media like me. Come on, cheer for the story.
Good stories.
And that would be a fascinating one. Final thought on the week from Elliot Friedman. A takeaway from All-Star Game, a thought on trades, speculation of what's next in the NHL, a kind word.
You know, I really liked what Matthews did. for Marlowe. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a reason that Matthews is the eventual captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, because he would think of
doing something like that.
My takeaway is I think we're really about 10 days away from things heating up. I think the conversation is starting to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once those three guys, Stone, Duchesne, and Panarin, well, Panarin's made his intentions known. But once Columbus decides what to do, and once those other two guys in Ottawa decide what to do, that's when I think things will really start to get crazy.
Moving from the back burner to the front burner as trade deadline approaches February the 25th. I want to thank Rickard Granberg for stopping by the podcast today. That was a lot of fun. Expect to hear from him again on this podcast, hopefully sooner than later. As always, I want to thank our producer, Emil Delich, for keeping us on track here and making the podcast sound tasty. And we are closing out with a band from Reykjavik, Iceland. Brussels Sprouts International, BSI, as Emil does the pumps in the background. Yeah, you liking this one, eh, bud? All right, this is a personal favorite. This is Aki O'Leith. Did I get it right? Ish.
Nice.
Sort of. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for listening to 31 Thoughts, the podcast.